state Republican lawmakers are trying to limit the veto powers of Wisconsin governors.
They're pushing for a constitutional amendment that would prevent governors from using their veto pen to increase spending.
In the state budget he signed in July, Evers used his partial veto authority to give public schools a $65 million boost. Republicans introduced the amendment a few days later. A hearing took place this past Tuesday.
And in related news, the state Supreme Court has agreed to hear a separate challenge that would scale back the governor's veto powers.
Mordecai Lee is a professor emeritus at UW-Milwaukee and a former state lawmaker. Mordecai, good to have you back.
Thanks for inviting me, Rob.
Well, we talked to you a few months back when this constitutional amendment was first introduced. Before we dig into it and the latest on it, remind us how the governor of Wisconsin's veto authority stacks up compared to their colleagues around the country.
Well, generally speaking, we look at the Wisconsin governor's power of line item veto as exceptionally broad, that he or she can veto out words and sentences of any bill that affects money. In other words, not just an appropriations bill, but perhaps, let's say, a bonding bill or a retirement bill or something like that. And it's only been in our generation that there have been the most modest kinds of limitations on governors that have been passed by constitutional amendments. And so what we're talking about today in terms of what the Republican legislature is doing sort of fits in what I guess I'd call a secular trend of trying to define down a little bit more of the governor's powers.
Let's talk about the specific change here. The governor increased funding with a veto, which does sound, you veto, you think you take something out. This added some money. Does that fit into the current power of the governor as you see it?
Well, apparently there are a couple of instances where Tommy Thompson, who really used line item veto powers to the max, had that same effect of increasing funding for a program. But I think if we can set aside partisanship, which is sort of hard to do these
days. Sure, easy peasy.
But when you look at the Constitution and it talks about partial vetoes, in other words, the word part of a whole, I think that the legislature can make something of an argument that increasing funding for a program is not a part of a whole, it's an addition to a whole. So I think there's something of merit there, but there's so much of an overlay of institutional attacks and partisan attacks that it's really hard to get down to the merits of the matter.
Right. This is a case where Republicans are working to limit the power of a Democratic governor. Back in the days of Tommy Thompson, I know Democratic lawmakers who had a majority at many points there were upset about the Republican governor using these powers. Have we had moments where people sit back and say, okay, let's think about this outside of the bounds of partisanship and how much power a governor should have?
Well, it seems to me that when we look back at the earlier constitutional amendments, one of them was called the Vanna White veto. I was in the legislature at the time. It was the late 80s. That meant that you couldn't strike out a letter to create new words. That sort of struck me. I supported it. That struck me as relatively decent. The Frankenstein veto, the one that came from the Republican legislature when Governor Doyle was governor, said that you can't create new sentences. You can only line on a veto out a whole sentence or words within a sentence. That started to get to some significant limitations. But we probably have to be sure that we keep our eye on the institutional factor and the partisan factor of how we in Wisconsin amend our state constitution. And just a reminder to listeners, I guess this is my five-second mini-lecture, that the way our state constitution gets amended is it has to pass the state legislature in two subsequent legislatures, in other words, an intervening election. And if it passes two legislatures, then it goes straight to the voters. And the significant detail that's not verbalized is the fact that a governor plays no role. We're used to governors being able to veto things or line on to veto things. A governor can't stop a constitutional amendment. And so it was a very shrewd tactic by a Republican legislature when they wanted to ban single-sex marriage during Governor Doyle's administration by pursuing it through a constitutional amendment because he couldn't stop it. And so I think that very much is in play when we wonder why does a legislature so frequently tilt towards changing things through a constitutional amendment instead of through a law.
Well, but in this case, too, is the power of the veto defined by the Constitution? Can it be changed without a constitutional amendment?
No, I think you're right to emphasize that. With the courts interpreting the word part or partial, the way they have in the past. Indeed, it would require a much more explicit kind of constitutional amendment that explains it. The same thing happened when we legalized gambling, and it was interpreted by courts as meaning that Indian gambling in all respects was now constitutionalized. And then a much more detailed verbal constitutional amendment had to be passed to clarify it. So, yes, you're right. This is Civics 101. The only way to change the Constitution is to change the Constitution.
Talking to Mordecai Lee, Emeritus Professor at UW-Milwaukee, looking at a proposed change, proposed constitutional amendment limiting the governor of Wisconsin's veto power, saying, in effect, you can't add spending to a state budget using the veto power. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts on that and the power of the governor relative to the legislature. 800-642-1234 is the number. Mordecai, on a related note now, the state Supreme Court says it'll hear a challenge to state veto rules and nullify, or in this case, if they upheld it, would nullify four of Evers' budget vetoes. And here's a statement from Rick Essenberg, who heads up the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. They're a conservative group representing taxpayers in this challenge. They say the people of Wisconsin never intended the check on legislative power the governor's veto represents to permit the governor to legislate on his own. So, okay, there's this constitutional amendment over here. Here are these court challenges going straight to the state Supreme Court on the other. What do you think of this challenge?
Well, I think this is ideology and partisanship. I'm really reluctant to say it, but it's come to a point in our generation where the Supreme Court has become a partisan institution. When candidates run for Supreme Court, there's a de facto Republican nominee and there's a de facto Democratic nominee. And right now we have a conservative majority, a 5-2 conservative majority. And I regret that their decision-making seems to be becoming relatively reflexive. In other words, if this helps Republicans, we're for it. If this helps Democrats, we're against it. It's a sad state of affairs. I wish it wasn't that. But ever since the decision about Act 10, where they really sort of went through legal contortions to argue that the state's open meetings law did not apply to the legislature, even though the legislature passed the law saying it did, ever since then, I'm afraid we've ended up with a partisan, predictable, ideological voting pattern on the court.
Based on that, what do you think would be the outcome of this challenge then?
5-2. I'm really sorry to say it, and if I've just hurt the feelings of any Supreme Court members who are listening, I do apologize. But we have yet to see them taking issues so much on the merits that they really have a major disagreement with a Republican philosophy.
Yeah, when I've interviewed members of the Supreme Court at either side of that divide, they push back on that idea that they're Republicans or Democrats. Their judicial ideology happens often to line up with one side or another, they'd say. But couldn't you see a case where they really look at the institutions here, how the power of the executive and the legislature weigh against each other and consider this case on those merits?
Rob, I think that's a good scenario. And all things being equal, I wish that were the case, and I hope that's the case. But the fact that the Supreme Court took the case on original jurisdiction, in other words, they didn't let it go up the chain from the trial court to the Court of Appeals to them, I think is a signal that they've sort of made up their minds. They want to act on this, they want to act on it fast, and they know how they're going to act. So I'm afraid that them taking the jurisdiction is probably an indication of political reality.
Yeah, Jill Karofsky, who's running for the state Supreme Court, is campaigning on this issue in her campaign email. She says a right-wing group filed the lawsuit and immediately asked the Supreme Court to skip all the steps that these types of lawsuits normally follow. So, yeah, usually in the court system, you start at the little court, the local court, and ease your way up until you hit the Supreme Court, whether that's at the state or national level. We jumped right to the Supreme Court here. Is that problematic?
Well, it's legal, and so for all of your listeners wondering if they've broken any court rules, they have not broken it. And every once in a while, the state Supreme Court will take original jurisdiction. But I think it's noteworthy that they took this one and they took it so fast, and it has the appearance of them wanting to quickly affirm a conservative ideological position.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Tom is with us in Wauwatosa. Tom, hi.
Hey, Rob. Hey, Mordecai. I talked to you guys last time this issue was on the radio. Mordecai, I'm a former student, if you recall.
Sure.
I'm still just going to reiterate and rehash my point from last time. I think we need to get the adults back in the room, and we need to start figuring out some compromises, because as soon as the party who's in control of the legislature changes or the governor changes, we're going to be going through the same fiasco all over again. We're starting to look ridiculous, and we need to get some statesmen back in here. And I believe, as you said last time, find a way to compromise and go, okay, here's half a loaf, here's half a loaf. Are you good? Good. Not exactly, but you got something. Okay, let's keep it moving.
Tom, thanks for the call. Mordecai?
Well, Tom is right, and I give him an A, a follow-up to the course he took. But I think if we tried to figure out what would it take to change the nature of the membership of the Supreme Court so that we have legal scholars who are considered nonpartisan or considered fine scholars. The way we have it now is it's a de facto election based on partisanship. The way they do it in Washington is a president nominates someone, and then the U.S. Senate either confirms or rejects them. I don't think that's worked out very well either, whether one is a Democrat or Republican, in terms of the quality of the court. I've seen proposals that there be some kind of a nonpartisan nominating commission that would nominate finalists and then have some political process based on that. Maybe that's the way to get to what Tom and I would be hoping for, but it's a long shot, and I'm probably being idealistic.
We're talking about state Republicans' efforts to rein in the power of the governor. Mordecai Lee is with us, professor emeritus at UW-Milwaukee, former state lawmaker himself.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Should governors be allowed to use their veto pens to increase spending? How do you feel about a constitutional amendment to prohibit that practice? Are Republicans right to roll back governor's powers, or is this sour grapes because Scott Walker lost? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page.
We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. We continue our conversation with Mordecai Lee. He's an emeritus professor at UW-Milwaukee and a former state lawmaker. We're talking about state Republicans' efforts to limit the power of the governor. They're working on a constitutional amendment that would ban governors from using their veto power to increase spending.
Tell us what you think at 800-642-1234. Did Governor Evers abuse his veto power when he gave schools a funding bump, a boost with his veto pen? Do you want to see a constitutional amendment to prohibit this, or should Republicans have just tried to override that veto? What questions do you have about governor's veto authority or Republicans' efforts to rein in that power, as well as other powers of the governor? Call 800-642-1234. We'll go back to your calls now. Paul is with us in Burlington. Paul, hi.
Hello. Yes, I'd like to make a comment regarding the throttling of the governor's powers. It seems to me that it is sour grapes, and that I'm not sure, maybe because there's fewer Republicans, but Republicans in general just are starting to come across as like, hey, if we can't get it done this way, we're gonna do it another way, which almost seems like cheating in some aspects, as far as gerrymandering, which I know Democrats do as well. But this particular instance with Scott Walker, it just feels like sour grapes. And at one point, do the people of Wisconsin say, like, hey, we're not getting what we want because of all this tinkering? And, do the Democrats do it next?
Paul, thanks a lot for the call. And people have thrown into the mix the lame duck session back in December, where some powers of the attorney general and governor were limited. Rules changes, making it easier for the assembly at least to keep having votes on veto overrides. Is there a trend here, Mordecai?
I think there's a trend here. I think in this case, we could look at a kind of the culture of the Republican Party, which is much more feisty, much more willing to do things that might appear unpopular, that might really look aggressive, compared to maybe the culture of the Democratic Party is a little bit more moderate, a little bit more towards compromise. Certainly, if we look at Governor Evers, when he had the option of vetoing the budget because the state legislature would not compromise with him about the big issues, and he opted not to, that was a real indication of blinking from a political point of view, if one wants to follow Paul's scenario. Going back to Tom's comment, wouldn't it have been better if the state legislature, there were conservative Republicans and this left of center Democratic governor, would have compromised about school aids, would have compromised about these other issues? That's the world that I would like to see, but I'm afraid we're stuck in this, and it becomes just this cycle of, I don't know what to call it, just cycle of popping each other back and forth.
Thanks a lot for that call. And yeah, there were these recent rule changes I just mentioned in the assembly that would allow multiple votes to override vetoes. And under Wisconsin's constitution, a veto override is a two-thirds majority, I think, of those present at the vote. And that's conjured for Democrats a worry that we might see something like in North Carolina, where Republicans voted on a veto override while many Democrats were at a 9/11 memorial event. Are we going to end up there, Mordecai?
Well, it's possible. Certainly, Speaker Voss is an aggressive politician, and he's unapologetic about trying to maximize his leverage. The thing that surprised me about that is that for the few of us who remember parliamentary procedure, there's a very standard element of parliamentary procedure where it's called the division of the question. Division of the question means we'll take one vote at a time on one issue at a time. And so it really strikes me as going against one of the principles of parliamentary procedure to refuse to unbundle this kind of a vote. And I really wish that hadn't happened. It would be sort of unnatural, I guess one would say, from a point of view of parliamentary procedure to do it. But Speaker Voss is certainly willing to defend it.
Talking to Mordecai Lee, Emeritus Professor at UW-Milwaukee, looking at the governor's veto power in Wisconsin and efforts in the Republican-led legislature to limit that power. Back to your calls now. Joan is with us in Eau Claire. Joan, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. The Republicans that were in the legislature when Scott Walker was in office, they bent and bowed to every whim of Scott Walker. I find this to be extremely hypocritical because now that they have to do some compromising, they really aren't doing any compromising. It's kind of like a dream compromises at this point. They want to take power away from him. It's very telling, and I just think they're trying to shove their weight around, and maybe that's just Voss, but I find them hypocritical. They should be ashamed of themselves, really. And thank you for allowing me to speak.
Joan, thanks for the call. There were some thoughts from Republicans and from Governor Evers that because Governor Evers was there with the veto override, that Republicans approved some things in the budget that they might not have otherwise.
Well, I think the budget was largely what the Republicans wanted and largely what Evers did not want. They really gave him very little. Maybe the way to build on Joan's observation is if you go back to Governor Walker's last budget, and he had, I think it was about 50 or 60 line item vetoes. Several of those line item vetoes said he was vetoing something because he felt they impinged on the power of the executive, the power of the governor to run the executive branch. And so if one wants to accept the premise of what Joan was talking about, the fact that the Republican legislature did not object to line item vetoes that had to do with the power of a governor versus the power of the legislature was an indication that their partisan solidarity, their ideological solidarity, trumped their institutional concerns. And that is a dispiriting kind of phenomenon.
Thanks for that call. We heard from Joel on Facebook who wrote, Wisconsin has long had an extremely generous line item veto compared to most states. In the traditional sense, a veto was supposed to only allow a particular part of a budget to be removed from the budget. I think, Joel writes, we need to go back to that definition with the full knowledge. It'll be enforced on all governors, regardless of party affiliation. And that's how I usually understand the line item veto. You're going to veto this, you know, the corrections budget because you don't like it. You're going to sign off on the rest of it. We go back to that big chunk of budget. You're not vetoing this one line to tweak its meaning.
Well, Joel is right. But if you were to ask the average Wisconsinite, what does it mean for a governor to be able to have a partial line item veto and the focus of Supreme Court decisions on the word part, then that would tell us that because the governor can only do it in financial bills, that therefore it's about money, that you can reduce $1 million to $100,000 or to $10,000 or to $10. That would be a very traditional orientation that Joel is talking about. Governor Thompson was a pioneer in saying that if there's a $1 million appropriation, that he could write in the digit 9, in other words, to change 1 million into 900,000. And he argued successfully to the court that 900,000 is a part of a million, and therefore he could write in new digits. And I guess you'd say that from those kind of aggressive interpretations that Joel is right, that we've moved far away from a kind of a conventional understanding of what it meant to reduce appropriations.
Well, maybe next time we'll get some of your former colleagues in the philosophy department to talk about that. Mordecai, thanks as always for joining us today. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you, Rob.
That's Mordecai Lee, professor emeritus at UW-Milwaukee and a former state lawmaker. We talked with them about state Republicans' push to block governors from using their veto authority to increase spending. They're proposing a constitutional amendment, which could be voted on by a Senate committee next week, clearing the way for a full Senate vote. You can join in the conversation still over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. A lot of people weighing in on the idea, the proposal over there. Do that at the Ideas Network Facebook page or tweet us at Central Time WPR with your thoughts.